is Otano Public Health Chats with your host, Fiona. And today I'm excited to have another Zimbabwean. And also, I think this is very exciting for me personally because this is someone I worked under when I was doing my internship for my Master of Public Health. So just very exciting to be connected to someone who has done a lot of work at home in Zimbabwe. And also, I think this might be to date the person with the most years of experience in the field that we've had. So very excited to just hear and learn more from him. I'll let him introduce himself. So Dr. Msuka, if you could introduce yourself.
Right. Thank you so much, Fiona, for inviting me. Yes, we did a lot of great work a few years back, and it's important for us to interact. My name is Godfrey Msuka. It's a bit difficult for me to introduce myself because I have done many things, some which are unrelated. First and foremost, my first qualification was in veterinary medicine. I worked a few years as a vet doing research here in Zimbabwe as well as in the field in Botswana before I decided to go back to university and take more specific qualifications for public health. I have worked in a number of countries, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Nigeria, and recently, with part of the consultancy work that I've been doing, I have done work in Somalia, South Sudan, Namibia, Uganda, and a few other countries. So I'm really excited to have been invited to this program. And the areas that I have worked in, one, the side of veterinary public health. I've done some work initially, and I continue to write here and there for peer-reviewed articles. I've done a lot of work in the area of HIV, immunization, especially during the period when I was in Nigeria, TB. And more recently, I've done a lot of work around COVID in Southern Africa. Thank you.
Wow. And how many years has this been since, like, I don't know, since when you got that veterinary medicine training? Yeah.
It feels like forever. I would say I graduated 1996.
Wow.
So yeah, this is something that I've been doing for more than 20 years. And I've really enjoyed myself as I went through and changed to focus on different things and to move on. So I've tended to be a jack of all trades. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is added to the adventure.
Right, right. I can imagine. Yeah, I think it is a journey, right? Yeah, it is an adventure, you're right. And I think it makes for a good story, at least. And I think it definitely enriches, you know, your experiences and what you bring to the different projects and work you do.
So I see myself, I think, broadly as an epidemiologist, although sometimes when my kids do ask me what I do, I sometimes find it very difficult to give a straight answer. But you are right, it's a journey, and you continue to reinvent yourself as you go along.
Yeah, very important. I think there's always this pressure for when you're starting a career, or even just the early years, to kind of put yourself in a box. But at least I always used to wonder, so what will I become? Like, what will be like my name or my title? But it sounds like even from you, what you're saying, like describing to your kids what you do or looking at your profile, and even from previous guests, that it can change, right? You can start out, like we've had previous guests who started out as pharmacists. And now today we have you who started out as a veterinary doctor. So maybe let's start there. Start with like that maybe decision to study veterinary medicine. What were the options at that time for you when you chose to study veterinary medicine? Did you have like a plan? Like what was your thought process as you chose that degree program? And maybe, you know, the work experience right after that. And then, like you said, how you then, it sounds like you then pivoted after that to go specifically into public health. So maybe talk us through your thought process and the things that led you there.
Right. I think at high school, increasingly, it became clear to me, reading and talking to others, that going to vet school was something that I was interested in. And I felt that initially at one point I wanted to be a dentist, but unfortunately at that time there wasn't a dental school here in Zimbabwe, so that sort of fell away. So the option that made sense for me was veterinary medicine, one because of the diversity that one could end up having to deal with. So I then applied to vet school. I was accepted. I went to vet school. After a year or two there, I then started asking myself, is this something that I really want to do? I was increasingly unsure, and I wanted to change. But I remember speaking to my father, and he said, no, when you start something, you finish it. If you then want to change later, it's fine. But it's always important that when you start something in life, you always have the desire to bring it to a logical conclusion. So that then spurred me on to complete the program. And my first job was at one of the research institutes here in Zimbabwe, which has grown to become one of the key organizations in the country, the Biomedical Research and Training Institute, working under one of my former university professor, Professor Kelly, and Professor Patrick Peter-Mason. Working at BRTI, I soon realized that individuals who were dealing with human health, what you might call human health, there were more opportunities. They were always traveling, there were a lot of conferences, and they seemed to be far much more engaged as compared to where I was more focused on animal health. So that put in me a desire to say, no, maybe I need to diversify and move more into human health, because one, there are more career opportunities, it might actually be a better path. I then left to work for the government of Botswana as a senior veterinary officer for 3 years. Whilst there, I kept on looking for opportunities to try and go back to university. I was funded, fortunately, by WHO TDR to do what we call a Master of Science in Medicine, focused on epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of the Witwatersrand in South Africa. And then I then left my job in Botswana and went to the University of Witwatersrand. On completion of that program, the requirement of that scholarship was that I needed to come back to Zimbabwe, which I did. And joined a small local NGO called TASC that was supporting the ministry as well as other regional countries in the area of health systems research. So that allowed me then to take the diversion that I wanted. I worked there for about 2 years and then got another job, a more senior job at SAFIDS, regional HIV program, as the head of their strategic information. I worked there maybe for a year or 18 months before I then went back to Botswana to work for ACHAP. ACHAP, the partnership between the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the Merck Company Foundation, and the government of Botswana to support the HIV/AIDS program there, where I took a position as MND director. So my focus now was now on HIV as well as TB related strategic information. I was there for about 5 years before deciding to return to Zimbabwe, where I worked for UNICEF. My focus was HIV, disability, water and sanitation, which was a key issue there because the country had been dealing with a major outbreak of cholera, probably the largest ever. And it allowed me to focus more on new areas before getting a transfer to UNICEF Nigeria, where I ended up working on polio eradication, especially focused in the northern parts of the country, places like Kano, Sokoto, Maiduguri, and other areas. That's where I was spending my time. And then later on, I decided to come back to Zimbabwe to take on the position of country director for ICAP at Columbia, where I was tasked with implementing the first ever population-based HIV survey, which was what we call ZIMFIA 2015-2016. I worked for ICAP at Columbia, where we met for about 7.5 years before going into consultancy work, which I'm doing now.
Wow. I don't even know where to start. I have like so many follow-up questions from each of those experiences, but yeah, what a career journey, man. That's amazing. You've gone from, as you mentioned, starting out from the veterinary medicine, but I'm noticing like, HIV came up a lot from what you've just said. I've also noticed this theme, which I think we'll touch at the end around I feel like with many opportunities, it sounds like you chose to come back to Zimbabwe a couple of times. So I'll follow up on that point as well. And also this theme of like reinventing yourself and kind of learning new things and uptaking new fields and new skill sets with the MMed in epidemiology and biostats. But yeah, did you ever think, I guess my first like knee-jerk question is around the veterinary medicine that you studied, right? And even this polio eradication that you mentioned, or just like in general, even now with the field, I feel like in the field of public health and global health in general, this concept of one health and intersection of like climate change and global warming and things like that and public health. Have you found that your veterinary medicine training is relevant? Or like, do you find that like your work, I don't know, like intersects?
That's a very interesting question. Epidemiology, even if you look at biostats, whether you are applying it from a veterinary medicine perspective or human health, the concepts are the same, right? So it's not like you are really lost. If you are talking about prevalence, it's the same prevalence. Incidence, it's the same incidence. And when I was at vet school, the concept that is now very popular, the One Health concept, it wasn't necessarily being presented in the same way. I think there was more, it was more in silos. We were not necessarily working across areas or across professions. So I think it's a good thing that this evolution has happened, because at the end of the day, it's one thing,
Right.
and it's important to see it as such. My approach, as far as my career is concerned, not only just career-wise, even with life, even other colleagues that I've also mentored over the years, is that you work with what you have. So sometimes it's important not to restrict yourself to say, I only do this. Right? Because by you doing that, you are cutting out opportunities. Right? I mean, many things, many times someone will come and say, okay, we want you to do this. Can you do it? The natural answer, whether I've never done it before or I'm not really too sure, the almost always I would say yes, or I would say I would try. Right. For example, one of the major achievements, we conducted Zimbabwe's only survey on men who have sex with men when I was still with ICAP. That's a no-go area.
Right.
No one had ever done it. So when the request came forward, and it's a key area, especially if we are going to decisively address HIV in this country, the natural response was to say, we will try it. Let's do it. We'll find a way. So I think it's important for one to always have that mentality that, even if it's you're being pushed by fate into an area that you may not necessarily have thought about, is to always tell yourself that we will find a way. If not, I'll ask around and I'll get others who will also be able to assist me to be able to achieve.
Wow, no, that's very important. Wise words. I think that's something to definitely take note of for myself and to not like to constantly be open, I guess is what I'm hearing. And yeah, and just try.
Yeah,
And
you will
you're
fail.
right.
You will fail many times. And some of the results are disastrous, but the hope is that you will at least learn.
You'll at least learn,
Yeah,
right?
and know that this is not something, this is not the right way to do things. You will hopefully at least learn.
And that's a takeaway on its own, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. So we've done a little bit of some history of where you started out in terms of your training and some of your key work experiences. I think we'll continue to dig into that, but maybe to kind of give our audience a taste of what a person with a veterinary medicine background and an epidemiology background and, multi-year experience in from multilaterals to NGOs to government and, private partnerships experience. What does your maybe like what are you working on now? If maybe you could share either a key project you're working on right now, or maybe tell us a little bit of like what a day or a week in the life of someone with your expertise and experience looks like now. Like what will our careers look like 20 years from now?
Right. I think one thing that I'm currently doing, I do write a lot. I have a lot of peer-reviewed papers that I have written, and we have written a number with you, and we continue to write with different groups. So I do spend a lot of time interacting with colleagues across many sectors on work that we have done in the past, that where we are working on manuscripts. And also people do reach out with different ideas and say, no, are you interested in working with us? So I do spend a lot of time writing or contributing to writing of manuscripts and reports. Currently, I'm doing consultancy work, and I think one of the recent projects that I've recently completed, which I believe is a major achievement, something that I'm proud of, is I was requested by UNICEF in Somalia to assist them conduct the national stigma, HIV stigma index survey there. As you might be aware, Somalia is a country that has gone through a very prolonged period of challenges related to war and insurgents. So when I was asked to do that task, I really asked myself, is this something that I really want to do? And I said, yes, I'll go for it. I went to Somalia on my way to one of the locations there. There's a place called Garowe. The flight got canceled because there was fighting there. I wasn't able to go. I had to divert. I had to end up going to another place. And finally, one was able to complete this survey. So I felt really grateful that I have had this opportunity to contribute to an HIV response in a challenged part of Africa, a place where many people would say, no, I don't want to go there, or I don't want to get involved. But I made up my mind that I have something to offer. And yes, the HIV response there also requires support from others with my skills and my experience. And I went there and I supported, and we had a very successful survey conducted. And they were now able to use the results of the work that I did to apply for the next round of Global Fund funding for their HIV response. So this is what I do on a daily basis, working on different projects, supporting NGOs with their evaluations, and also supporting national response. I don't know if I've answered your question adequately.
Yes, I think you did. And it's interesting that like your career has taken you here. And it's, I guess, as someone who's been doing this with the podcast for a while, it's so not easy, but you can easily see the dots as they connect. Like you mentioned Zimthia, right? The work you did with that national population-based survey on HIV in Zimbabwe. You mentioned the for MSM, for men who have sex with men. The survey that was conducted in Zimbabwe as well. So it does kind of like looking on paper, it does connect, although very different context, it does connect that your skill set and your experience around national-based population surveys or work with HIV, right, led you to kind of doing this kind of work, but now in a what sounds like, a humanitarian context. So it's pretty amazing, but also very interesting how like you said, almost like how life happens or how kind of like opportunities present themselves as you progress in a career.
I think one thing is, I said recently there is a proposal that I'm working on. I hope to be supporting a particular organization soon, where they approached me to say, look, we need someone to conduct a national survey for malaria in South Sudan. I've done surveys for many other things, but I've not done specifically for malaria. And I said, sure, I'm willing to try. Let's do it. So I look forward to, in the next week or two, to be proceeding to South Sudan to support them on this activity.
Oh yeah, so another new disease area, at least it sounds like for you, and then also a different context, but still somehow the same work I feel like you've done or you've had experience in, which I think is really cool. And then maybe I wanted to hear, this is just my personal interest, but I think others would love to hear this as well. I found the you had mentioned the work you did in Botswana, where I think you said it was the government of Botswana. You mentioned the Gates Foundation and the Merck Foundation, and I think it was an HIV related project. But do you
Yes.
mind sharing a little bit more about that work and what that looked like? Especially, I think what caught my eye is like the different type of stakeholders there. But what did that look like for you and like the kind of like people you worked with and the level you were working at?
Right. My work in Botswana with the African Comprehensive HIV/AIDS Partnership was very key in the development of my career because I was working at a higher level. Substantial budget. It was the first time for me to manage a substantial budget as M&D director, where we were supporting Botswana. Botswana at that time was the first country to implement a substantial public health HIV treatment program. So it allowed, as you rightly say, me to work at a high level with different stakeholders and also to be able to learn from many colleagues. I was very fortunate to have a very exceptional boss, Dr. Temba Moeti, who was our CEO at that time. I was able to download a lot from him as to how to work with different stakeholders. And even for example, having worked with different governments across Africa, it's different. It's not the same. Each country is unique. It has a different context. So what's important is to go there and interact with people who are more familiar than yourself and try and understand how that country works so that you can be able to come in at the right using the right approach and to be able to contribute. And you do work with governments, you know, at their invitation. So at the end of the day, they have the final say, but they are also interested in hearing what your contributions are. So it's important for you to know your place and to work within the framework of that country. So I was very fortunate. And also, I think in my career, I've also been very fortunate to have worked with very key people who have helped me develop various skills, and I've been able to download from these key individuals. When I was, for example, when I was with ICAP at Columbia, it was a great honor for me to work with the Pillar of Public Health, Global Public Health, herself, Wafa Osada, and to be able to interact with her and to download so much from her, as well as the Deputy Mark Fassell. It was a very enriching experience. As well as other places that I've worked, there are always people who, if you are mindful, you are able to learn and to download and get a lot of guidance. So it's always important to work with others, and also to be able to allow others to input into your career so that you continue to develop.
So many key nuggets there, especially the piece you mentioned around working. I think this is, at least for me in my career so far, that's also been a theme around like when we work in public health, right? Especially like the public in public health, right? By design is public systems within countries. So like you rightfully put it, right? We are, you know, at the service of these governments, of these countries, and how they choose to respond to their public health, you know, situations. So I liked the way you framed around like, you know, understanding the context we get to work in and being able to listen and learn, you know, from the different stakeholders, but at the end of the day, understand that these are the people we're serving and we work within, you know, the constraints that they give us basically. So that's, I think that's a key piece to keep in mind in the work that we do. And I think it's really amazing. You mentioned, I like this term you mentioned of like download, and like working with, you know, people who you then get to learn from and lean into. I also think you mentioned mentoring at some point. So I'd be curious to hear a little bit of that around. It sounds like to me, you have had people who have mentored you. I think with this HR partnership, it sounds like you leaned a lot into people who then guided you in your career. And then it sounds like you also have people you mentor. So I guess what has been that journey in your career around like mentoring others and also being mentored by others?
Right. I think one key thing that I've learned over the years is that it's always important to ask. Right. If you are not too sure, if you go into an environment, you will be able to identify individuals who are operating at a higher level than yourself. So it's always important for you to make the effort to approach them and say, look, I want to learn. I see how you approach this problem. Do you mind maybe for my own benefit explaining to me how you arrived at this decision? And most people are willing to open up and to explain, and over time you establish these relationships. And also vice versa, other people also do occasionally come to me and they also ask me certain questions, and it's important also for me to also to be able to explain. And also to be able to give suggestions. People don't necessarily have to agree with my perspective. I try to be as honest and as candid as possible to explain how I see things and why I see things the way they are, and how have I arrived at a suggestion or a recommendation, so that individual can also be able to have a different view. Maybe sometimes my view is different from theirs. They have something that they can counterbalance and weigh and make a decision. So it's always important to be willing to listen and to learn, right? And I continue, even up to this day, there are people who have been instrumental in the development of my career, some more than 20 years, some more than 25 years. I keep in touch with them. And we, discuss different things, politics and other things. And I always know that those individuals are there if I need to ask a question, or if they see me do something or say something which they think is inappropriate. They are not afraid to let me know that, I think that wasn't wise. If I were you, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, no, that's very important. Having people who hold you accountable, right? And who can kind of like guide you and make sure you're taking the right path. I also noticed that you mentioned your father at the beginning. You said he influenced you so that you could continue and finish your veterinary training, which I think was pretty cool.
Yes. Even my mother, I mean, even my siblings. I mean, there are many times where we have very candid talk, discussion about many things. And even I do have friends that we have very frank discussions about many things. So it's always important to have people who are not afraid to give you their honest opinion about different things. Even
Right.
my wife and my kids, they are very candid. There are many things that my kids think I don't do well. So, and they are always letting me know that.
Right.
So whether I agree with them or not is another story. But it's always important to allow people that freedom to be able to talk to you and give you candid feedback.
Right. To be willing to
Yeah.
listen and learn. And to always ask questions, right, at any point. Okay,
Yes.
we're taking notes. Yeah, so I also wanted to mention, you mentioned that after you finished your veterinary training, you were at BRTI, which is really, I guess for me, it's just a fun historical fact to know that they've been, in existence for so long. I think last season we had one guest, I think, who also worked there after they finished their bachelor's. So it's good to know
Yes.
that they've been doing this amazing work for a very long time.
I was actually their second employee. It had just been started. It was a long time ago. I was their
Oh
second
my
employee.
goodness. Wow. That's some like historical, like that's very important information to know. And it's good to know. I guess for me, I've always, as someone interested in research, I've always just been curious and just like digging around, understanding like the research landscape. not just in Zimbabwe where I'm from, but like getting to understand who are like who's doing research on the ground. I get the sense that in global health, largely, right, we have a lot of like you have the multilaterals, right? Your UNICEF, for example. We have your international NGOs that you mentioned, your foundations. But I've always just wanted to understand more the landscape for research in different African countries and like how long it's, you know, that those institutions have existed and kind of what support is there. So it sounds like from there, that's where you got the opportunity to go for your next degree, right?
Yes, from Barat, when I was at Barat, I did an MPhil, Master of Philosophy with the University of Hertfordshire in the UK, before I then proceeded to Botswana. From Botswana, I went to University of Witwatersrand, where I did an MSmed, and 2 years ago, I completed my PhD with the University of Portsmouth. But when I was at BRT, I intended originally, the intention was that my MPhil would be converted to a PhD at that time. But due to a number of factors, that I wasn't successful. But this is something that I always wanted. So more than 20 years later, I came back and I d decided to try and try again to do to get a PhD. I was fortunate that this time I was able to complete one.
Wow, that's amazing. So you have like what? How
So it
many
has been
degrees?
20 years. I have 4 degrees, but I don't think that really means much. It was an individual trying to find a path. So you are going around, you are going around, you are going around, but it's not necessarily about a degree per se. It's also the experiences and the interaction that one gets along the way. I think those are all important in shaping you to become what you want to be. Right. But I think as one thing that I do as an individual, I read a lot. I mean, I'm always buying books. I'm on Amazon. Books are always coming, and my wife thinks sometimes that's too much. But I'm always trying to read as much as possible and collaborate, work with others, because it is not good, I think, career-wise, to try and do everything on your own. You need to work with others. You need to different people for you to contribute into their careers, and also for them to do, vice versa, into you. So I do collaborate with many other people, writing papers, manuscripts, as a way of continuing to learn.
No, that's really a really important point. And thank you for that like clarification, which is like I guess first, congratulations on finally getting the PhD that you said, you know, you had wanted to do and you came back to it. And also just that like color you added around that. It's not, I mean, it's not just about the degrees because this has come up, I think, at the beginning of my podcast. We started out as we did what I hosted some Twitter spaces, two of them where, you know, it was live recording and we just had a panel of people working in public health and people were asking questions. And after that panel, you know, a couple of people came to me in the DMs and like personally and just saying, oh, I don't know if public health is for me or I can work in this field because one, it seems like there are a lot of doctors. That's something that came up a lot. And another one was, if not doctors, there are a lot of people in the science field. So a lot of people felt intimidated by that. And then also this thing of, I remember talking to my other friends recently, they're like, oh, every time you work on a health project, all the people come in and they have like all these initials that come after them and before them. So it does feel like a field where people are constantly looking to learn more. But you're right that learning isn't, you know, it's more than just a degree, but the journey of
Yeah.
like seeking the
Well,
knowledge.
one thing which is interesting, I think one of my key mentors over the last 15 years or so, who is a key individual in the area of public health, who has contributed immensely. He's a mathematician. He's got a P yeah, he has a PhD in mathematics, and he has done a lot of work in modeling infectious diseases. So you can have people who are coming from many different places. One of the key epidemiologists who has worked with BRTI, who has contributed immensely in the generation of evidence in the area of HIV. His background is his first degree, his first qualification. He's an accountant. So I think we need to be open and accept that you can have people coming in from different areas who are coming in with different contributions. And I think this is the way to go because it's a multi-faceted area and people have different ways in which they can contribute.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And I think for me, that's one of my favorite reasons of like why I chose the field of public health is just how, flexible and like versatile we are in terms of like you mentioned collaborating earlier, right? So like as you collaborate, you get to see that different people like come from different backgrounds, like you said. And that also for me has resulted in like the projects I've enjoyed working on the most have been ones where I work with people who have, who don't have the same background as me, who come in with a completely different perspective that we probably, would have missed when trying to, I don't know, set up a focus group or set up an assessment to collect data in the field. So, yeah, no, that's very important. And I think I always use that as a reason why many more young people should look to work into the field, that we need people from different backgrounds and different skill sets that could all contribute to, improving the health and saving people's lives.
I'll give you an example. The work that we worked together with the PMTCT art costing and evaluation assessment here in Zimbabwe. We were working with economists. So it's not only medical people. And that information that came from PACE was key in terms of trying to understand what are the costs in terms of putting together and maintaining a robust HIV response in this country.
Yeah, you're right. It was an econ background because we're doing a cost effectiveness and evaluation. Yeah.
Yes.
No, yeah, we're having so much fun, Dr. Msuka, but we need to wind down. So maybe I think as we start to go to the end, could you maybe now that we know a little bit about you and your background and the work you do now and how you've moved along and what has been important for you there. Could you maybe, from your perspective, how would you define public health? When you say, you did a PhD in public health or you work in the field of public health, what does that mean to you?
All right, that's an interesting question. I think had it been 6 months or a year ago, I would have tried to answer that question. But now I will just go to ask AI and ask, and it will tell me what
Yeah, use
public
that
health is.
chat
Right.
GPT.
Yeah, it will tell me. It will tell me. It will tell me what public health is. So I think there are different definitions and perspectives. And I think that's why it's important to embrace different skills for us to be able to deal with it. I mean, for example, some of the work that I have done here in Zimbabwe has been working with the apostolic groups, some of which have not are not necessarily open to Western medicine, a Western approach to how to fight disease and infection. So you would need people with a behavioral approach who understand some of these things to be able to approach those groups. So public health has to be broad in terms of how you look at it and how you approach it. So I think that's important. And there are areas of public health that are still to unfold, going forward. Even now we are talking about chat GTP. I mean, there are people who are programming, such tools to be able to provide information to people who are asking questions to do with public health. So we also have to be embracing such approaches and it will continue to evolve. Right. I think for it to be relevant, it has to continue to evolve. So there is no fixed definition or approach to it. It will continue to evolve as different ways of doing things come into play.
No, that's a good answer. That's a good non-answer, Dr. Suka. I feel like I've gotten so many responses to this question. And you're right. I don't know. Like personally, I'm still, I think that's part of this podcast goal is to figure out what is public health. But I think, you know, from every different guest, we've heard different perspectives. But I think from your response, I heard the idea of like it needing to be a broad category. It needing to be an inclusive category, right? And then you also say it needs to be evolving because, you know, the people we're working with, the different interests of the people we serve are constantly changing. And you're right that even when you talk of, you know, I think a lot of last season we talked a lot about COVID, you know, because that's what we're coming out of, we're still going through, depending on who you ask. And you're right that with, you know, apostolic groups or any other faith-based group, right, there are people who didn't want to get vaccinated, for example, right, or didn't want to receive treatment. And if you think, even with the polio eradication that you mentioned in Northern Nigeria,
Yes.
thinking about how do you serve those populations that are not only hard to reach, but maybe have differing viewpoints and perspectives that they bring to their own health and wellness, right?
Yeah, I mean, even when I was in Nigeria, we're using a similar approach, even here, where you do work with champions of these various different religious groups, some who might be pastors, some who might be imams, who have accepted the message. And they are the ones who are now going into their communities as public health champions to explain using the language and the terminology that is used within that grouping to get people on board, be it to polio vaccination or COVID vaccination. So we have to be broad because if you go there and you're using a Western medicine approach, but these individuals don't believe in that, then it means immediately they'll shut you out. So we have to work with different approaches so that we reach the target. People understand what we're trying to say and they come on board.
Right, no, absolutely. That's a key message. I won't dilute it. I'll just move on to our next question. We've defined public health now, and I think we've already heard from some of your responses, some of the things that you like and enjoy about public health. I think you talked a lot about like reinventing yourself and you know, being flexible to opportunities as they present themselves. So maybe we won't do too much about what you enjoy. And maybe we can address challenges for a little bit, especially I think from someone with your breadth and depth of experience, it would be interesting to hear. Maybe you could highlight your top two, top three, you know, what are the key challenges you've faced, you know, or you think that the field as a whole is grappling with or working on in your experience?
Right. I think that's a very important question that you have asked. And as one who has worked in a number of African countries, I think there is variation in terms of the extent of this problem across the continent. But my feeling is that African governments have underinvested in health. Yeah. So that's why you are always having, for example, periodic outbreaks of cholera, be it here in Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Malawi, South Africa, and other places. It's because over the years, the governments have not invested enough in terms of infrastructure, water reticulation infrastructure, sewerage infrastructure. And we see this played in other areas of health as well as public health. And I think this is a major concern. Yes, we may have bilateral partners or multilateral partners that are coming in, but I think we as Africans, we have a responsibility to be also concerned about our own health and to ensure that our priorities are right. For example, you may have governments, we know some governments that are spending a lot of money buying helicopters, for ambulances and other things. Whereas basic infrastructure at facility or clinic level is not in place. So if they were to prioritize, if you were to ask me, maybe I'm not the right person to be asked, but I don't think that that's where our money needs to be going to. Right. Currently, we have an exodus of healthcare workers, and this has been happening repeatedly over the last 25 years as they move mainly to the UK, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the US. It has a lot to do with remunerations as well as working conditions, where some of the consumables that they need to be successful as healthcare workers, they are not available in these facilities. It's because governments have failed to make the investment in the healthcare sector. And I think this problem has to be addressed. And it's not the multilateral or bilateral partners that will do that. It's us. We have to make sure that we are spending money to make sure that the health of our own people is improved.
No, absolutely. I think even in South Africa, they just recently had an outbreak for cholera, and like Zimbabwe.
Yeah, there's a major outbreak there. I think 20, 30 something people have died. And it's the same problem, right? Water, reticulation, people don't have access to potable water. There's a sewage problem, right? They don't have infrastructure, especially in the informal settlements, infrastructure to handle that sewage. So it means every other year you are having a major outbreak of cholera.
No, that's a good point that when we have, diseases like cholera at this point, really, they're not like COVID. With COVID, it was, depending on how you look at it, it was a new disease, right? Yes, it was a SARS-CoV, and we've seen that before, but it was new, and we still had to figure out the vaccine and how it spread. But with cholera, we know
Yes. And the
it's not
tools are
new.
there. I mean, they are very good vaccines, even if the governments have, may not have addressed infrastructure, let's say. But certainly these oral vaccines, they are readily available. What is stopping our governments from procuring these vaccines annually and making sure that before the rainy season, those populations that are at highest risk receive the vaccines?
Absolutely, yeah, no,
It doesn't
definitely.
require a multilateral UN agency or anybody. It just means we just need to get our priorities right.
I agree with that the governments are at the core of at least the government response, or it's not even response really. What you talked about around infrastructure and investment is more of like baseline investment, right? Before we even talk about responding to outbreaks as they come, it's just how do we set up our health systems so that we have all these things in place to be ready, right? No matter what.
Yes.
Exactly. No, I definitely important thing to think about, and I can see how that, looking back over time, it can come out as like a theme around different countries and just seeing where those kind of holes, strategic holes are around investing in healthcare. So thank you for
Yeah,
that.
and I think civil society has a role to conscientize the populace by reviewing budgets and how governments are spending money and red flagging where wastage is occurring or where things of low priority are receiving huge allocations in budget.
Right, about prioritizing, yeah. In
Yes.
the budget, yeah. Yeah, it would be nice to see. I wonder, yeah, I'm thinking like I know for Zimbabwe, I've done similar work around Zambia where we were looking at health workforce prioritization tied to like health outcomes, and just it all goes back to the budget, right? It's like, well, you can, yeah, how are you going to pay the said specialist once you train them? Does the government have that allocation in their budget? And that's all it came down to, right?
Yeah, because if it's not there, then the salaries are not going to improve.
They're not. And then, like you mentioned, then we have this exodus of healthcare workers to other countries or places where they can find better compensation. No, all very important things that I think could even make another episode.
Yeah. No, you can always invite me. I would be keen to
Right? We can
participate.
dig deep into these technical pieces. I would love to do that, or maybe as a panel. That's definitely something in the works later on in the season. So we'll hold you to that. But maybe to wrap us up today, as like your closing remarks, can you maybe share around, looking back at your career and all the work you've done to date and even, your upcoming projects, what have been your key learnings as far as like career, like pursuing careers, or what would you look back and tell a younger version of yourself, right? If you were looking at 18-year-old Dr. Msuka, what would you tell him in terms of like guiding like the career path they take? What are your key like pieces of advice?
Right. I think the two main points, I think you need to work with others, become more engaged and try and establish as many collaborative relationships as possible. And secondly, be open to opportunities and be less selective, because sometimes many opportunities that we think are not very exciting are the real opportunities that over time will unfold to something which is more impactful. So be open to accept what life gives you and work with it.
And work with it. No, that's a very important thing. I feel like that's come up a couple of times as well. So you've mentioned it as like being open and being engaged. I think I've heard it before, and some, I think it was Oprah, and I think someone last episode also said the idea of like doing what you can until you can do what you want to do. So kind of going with the flow and doing, your best in that moment. And that it will kind of like invest into your future.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's very important. It's hard, I will say. I always push back on this a little bit, and say as a young person, or not as much anymore, but definitely I can say like 5 to 8 years ago, it's hard in the moment. It can feel not overwhelming, but it can feel like there's nothing in coming up, when you're working in that internship and it's unpaid or whatever, like, or just trying to find your first job, for example. I think that's come up before. It can be challenging. So I guess my hope is that as people listen to this podcast and hear different career journeys and experiences, that they can see that there is beyond, the now and kind of like figuring it out step by step.
Sure.
No, thank you so much, Dr. Msuka. This has been really great. I don't know if there's maybe the last call would be, I don't know if there's any particular programs or opportunities or anything you would want to highlight or share. You can either share them right now or you can also share them via email and then I will put them in the podcast notes.
Right, no problem. Let me think about it. I can always send you an email later.
All right. Thank you so much. This has been Utano Public Health Chats with your host, Fiona. And today we were interviewing Dr. Godfrey Msuka from Zimbabwe.